MSW Media.
News with swearing. Daily Beans, Daily Beans. Daily Beans, Daily Beans.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Beans for Monday, May 4th, 2020. Today, Trump fires another inspector general and pushes to reopen the country while simultaneously putting in a massive order for body bags. Pence threatens to sue reporters. The stay in the Mueller grand jury material case is denied. Trump blocks public disclosure on coronavirus supplies. The U.S. will not take part in the global treatment and vaccine launch. And the Kansas City primary results are in. I'm your host, A.G. That was weird just to say. I'm your host, A.G., and have nothing come after it. I'm flying solo today. We're going to have updates from Jordan. She's going to send her information in for the A block. We're having some internet issues, so we're going to have to record those separately today. But I will be joined by Mandy for good news at the end of the show. Also, may the 4th be with you. It is the 4th of May, Star Wars Day. It's also MCA Day. That sort of gets overshadowed a little bit, and I just want to give a shout out to MCA, who from the Beastie Boys, one of my heroes. So, yes, may the 4th be with you. Anyway, everyone, please pay attention now because we are going to launch right into the next segment. Jordan has a lot of updates and a lot of news for you. So let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes.
Hello, welcome to Jordan's Corn Beans. Today, I have got a few different stories for you. First up, coming out of... Well, okay, so this is very frustrating. Trying to find the best words to describe this. It's incredibly predictable, but very frustrating, much like most of the things that happens right now out of this administration. But the Trump administration announced that they will not take part in the launching of a global initiative to speed the development, production, and distribution of drugs and vaccines against COVID-19. It is a WHO-led joint, which I think we can assume is the reason why they're not interested in being a part of this initiative. They did give a quote trying to explain themselves. They said there will be no U.S. official participation. We look forward to learning more about this initiative in support of international cooperation to develop a vaccine for COVID-19 as soon as possible. We covered that Fauci is talking about, you know, starting to fast track this production ourselves, hopefully trying to get something out and some stockpile of vaccines ready as early as January before the trials have been completed. So, you know, the sentiment is there to want to do this as quickly as possible, but it's really hard to not think that the only reason they're deciding to not jump on board with this is because of its affiliation with WHO, or also just like Trump's general sort of isolationism approach to how he leads this country. Of course, as a reminder, Trump announced the suspension of funding to the World Health Organization. And the U.S. is the largest donor to that. But now, just regarding this specific initiative, since, the U.S. is not involved, the U.S. is not involved, and French President Macron and German Chancellor Merkel are going to be the ones that will help launch the global initiative Friday. So that's exciting in general for the world, I guess, and not us. But good to know people are working together and Trump doesn't want to be a part of it. That's sick. Next up is a story. This is a bit morbid and bleak, so trigger warning for death-related topics. If you want to skip, maybe I'll keep this short, so just like a minute or two. But the federal government has placed orders for over 100,000 new body bags to hold victims of COVID-19 in April, and that's according to internal administration documents that were obtained by NBC as well as public records. This is the biggest set that's been procured, is earmarked for purchase the day after Trump projected that the death toll in the U.S. might not exceed 50,000 or 60,000. So, you know, given the fact that these 100,000 body bags were specifically earmarked for COVID-19 deaths, that's what it sounds like. If I'm reading and understanding that correctly, there's a huge disconnect between the messaging of Trump to the American people and what scientists and officials are preparing for. Obviously, you know, they said this in the story that they're hoping that they won't have to use those, but they decided to order that much because they feel that that's what's the smartest thing to do right now. So not trying to like stir up any more fear, because we don't necessarily need that right now, but it is an indication that, yeah, just Trump and his team are at odds, seemingly. I'd be curious to see what Trump says specifically in response to questions about that. Okay, bookmark. And to the really morbid story. Our next story, Vice President Pence's office is threatening to retaliate against that reporter that broke the story that Pence's office told journalists they had to wear masks for Pence's visit to the Mayo Clinic. And this is, of course, the requirement that Pence didn't follow. And that came out, and that just looks awful. And it's just facepalm as fuck, him not wearing a fucking mask. It seems like such a no-brainer. It is a no-brainer and almost willfully obstinate, which is how it comes across. But Pence went to the clinic Tuesday, and he got so much shit after that photo came out without a surgical mask. He was the only person in the room not wearing one, too. It wasn't like everybody wasn't wearing one. He was the only person. That clinic requires that visitors wear masks as a precaution against spreading the coronavirus. But Pence's wife, Karen, said in an interview with Fox News on Thursday that he was unaware of the mask policy until his visit was over. So, I don't know. I really, part of me doesn't care to think too hard about, like, if he willfully did that or if he didn't. The fact is that it is not on the forefront of his mind as it should be, especially when you're literally in a hospital. It's just such a fucking no-brainer thing. I do not understand why he wouldn't have just done that anyway, regardless of whatever policies were posted or requirements, you know, they were notified about. But the journalist said that he was notified by the White House Correspondents Association that Pence's office had banned him from further travel on Air Force Two. I didn't know it was called Air Force Two. It's kind of funny. Air Force Two doesn't have the same ring as Air Force One, does it? I guess that's kind of the point. A spokesperson in Pence's office later told Voice of America managers that any punishment was still under discussion, pending an apology from Herman. So, that makes sense, doesn't it? Force the person to apologize for publishing a photo of you doing something that is setting a horrendous example and really could have been very easily prevented. I mean, the good examples were all around you. Everybody else in the room had one on, and then you did it, and now you're going to attack the reporter that showed that. I mean, I get like a conversation pulling him off to the side, maybe being like, dude, could you help me out here? Are you on my team or not? You know, maybe something like that. But to literally ban them from traveling on Air Force Two, that seems a bit over the top to me, personally. Just another example of incredible defense mechanisms and a complete inability to just own up to when you fucked up. My final story. The Trump administration is refusing to disclose how it's distributing medical supplies for the response to COVID-19 that was paid for with U.S. taxpayer dollars. Through a White House initiative known as Project Airbridge. So the Trump's administration allowed 6 multi-billion dollar medical supply companies that are receiving government aid to import the supplies to block public release of the data. That's according to FEMA. Here's a direct quote. At this time, FEMA does not have the authority to release this information. That's according to a spokesperson for the agency. And a spokesperson for McKesson Corp, they're one of the companies that I just talked about, they denied making any demand that information was that information be kept secret. And the spokesperson went on to say, consistent with McKesson's commitment to fighting this pandemic, McKesson is cooperating with FEMA to facilitate the release of state-by-state data as appropriate, end quote. So, if you thought we were going to see the day where we could rest easy knowing that our tax dollars were going to things in the right way, today is not that day. You will not get that satisfaction. And it seems like we won't get that satisfaction as long as someone's in the White House that doesn't really care to be transparent. And regardless of whether or not you're a Republican or a Democrat, I think we can all agree that Trump's MO is constantly trying to put blinders over the people that would be holding him accountable. Just isolationist all the time, everywhere. It's easier to lie that way and crime that way, isn't it? Nice. Someone in our happy hour, our Daily Beats happy hour, said, which, by the way, you can join if you're a patron. You can sign up at patreon.com. He said that I sound so sad without AG on my hot notes. And I feel like this segment is a great example of that. I'm not sad. It's just, I mean, the news, you know, it's not very fun. It's definitely easier to make lighter when you've got AG with you or Amanda with you. And I'm excited for the time when we could do that all the time. But I'm trying to keep my spirits up delivering this stuff, folks. I'm doing my best. I hope you're doing okay and having a good Sunday if you're a patron, Monday if you're not. And I hope you all have a good start to your week, everybody. Stay safe. Stay home. Do what you can. And be well. That's my chopped up version of AG sign off. All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good day. Bye.
All right, thanks, Jordan, for those updates. Everybody, we have a lot more headlines to get to, so stick around. We'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, it's AG. This Helping of Daily Beans is brought to you by Helix Sleep. All of us struggle from time to time getting a good night's rest. But if night after night you find yourself having difficulty falling asleep or restlessly tossing and turning, it's time to check out Helix Sleep. For me, I found that it wasn't stress, worry, politics, guilty conscience. It was one of the biggest causes of sleepless nights. Not getting the sleeps is having the wrong mattress for the way that I sleep. So I highly recommend checking out Helix Sleep. It's made such a difference in my life. Seriously, best mattress I've ever owned. And I know Mandy will tell you the same thing. She has one and Jordan has one. Seriously, it is like sleeping on a cloud. And they have a quick quiz that takes just 2 minutes online to complete, and it matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. It's totally customized. There's nobody on the planet exactly like you, so why would you buy a generic mattress built for everyone else? Helix Sleep customizes their mattresses to fit you and the way you sleep. Whether you're a side sleeper, a hot sleeper, you sleep too cold, you like a plush bed or a firm bed, with Helix, there is no more confusion and no more compromising on an average mattress. Helix Sleep was even awarded number one best overall mattress of 2019 by GQ and Wired Magazine. So just go to helixsleep.com/dailybeans, take their 2-minute sleep quiz. They'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life, I swear. They have a 10-year warranty also, and you get to try it out free for 100 sleeps. No risk. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but you will totally love it. We all love it. Helix is offering now up to $125 off all mattress orders for our listeners at helixsleep.com/dailybeans. That's Helix, H-E-L-I-X, sleep.com/dailybeans for up to $125 off. All right, everybody, welcome back. The New York Times reported over the weekend that the president has announced the nomination of an inspector general for the Department of Health and Human Services who, if confirmed, will replace an acting official who angered him with a report last month highlighting supply shortages and testing delays at hospitals. Her name is Christy Grimm. She was the principal deputy, she still is for now, the principal deputy inspector general at the Department of Health and Human Services. She released a report last month outlining shortages, and her replacement is just one in a wave of attacks on inspectors general providing oversight for Trump's pandemic response. Of course, Trump waited until after hours to announce the change. In recent weeks, Trump has fired the inspector general that led to the president's impeachment, Atkinson. He's also fired the Pentagon inspector general that was nominated to oversee the panel for stimulus spending, and he replaced a key IG overseeing virus relief spending. Her report, Grimm's report, identified critical shortages of supplies, revealing that hundreds of medical care centers were struggling to obtain testing kits, PPE, and ventilators. And if you remember, we talked about this. I spoke about it. Trump was asked about this report during one of his task force briefings, and he responded very angrily, saying, "Did I hear the word inspector general? Really? It's wrong." His report is wrong. They'll talk to you about it. Where did he come from, this inspector general? What's his name? What's his name? What's his name? He kept asking. You tell me his name. Find me his name. Another reporter later on pointed out that she, not he, worked during Obama's administration. And Trump then said, it worked for Obama. Oh, there you go. It must be politically motivated. But Grimm is not an Obama appointee. She's been working in the inspector general office under Bill Clinton and served under George W. Trump then attacked her on Twitter later. Why didn't the inspector general who spent 8 years with Obama, did she report on the failed H1N1 swine flu debacle where 17,000 people died, by the way? Why did she not want to talk to the admirals, generals, VP, and others in charge before doing her report? Another fake dossier is what he called it. And we thought she would be in jeopardy of losing her position, and now she has. And from the Washington Post, Mike Pence is threatening action against a reporter who tweeted about his visit to the Mayo Clinic without a mask. Steve Harmon, who covers the White House for Voice of America, suggested that there was more to the story after Karen Pence, the ultimate supreme of all Karens, said in an interview with Fox News that he was unaware of the mask policy until his visit was over. That is clearly a lie. Harmon tweeted, quote, "All of us who traveled with Pence were notified by the office of the vice president, the day before the trip that the wearing of masks was required by the Mayo Clinic and to prepare accordingly." The tweet outraged Pence's staff, saying Harmon had violated, not that he was lying, but he violated an off-the-record memo. Because the memo that they were given that said you have to wear a mask said off the record. There were off the record terms of this planning memo that was sent to him. But it's unclear how long the off the record order had to be followed. A lot of people thought, well, yeah, it's off the record until we go. But it's unclear, like I said, once it's over, is it still off the record? That's not in the order, in the memo that he received. And Washington Post got a copy of this memo. In retaliation, this reporter has been kicked off Air Force Two. And that's even though a Wall Street Journal reporter did the same thing, but has not been removed. The more conservative Wall Street Journal has not been, this guy, that reporter was not removed for saying after the fact that we were all aware we had to wear masks. And even the Mayo Clinic tweeted out, hey, we told everybody they had to wear masks, but that tweet was deleted under pressure from, I'm going to guess, the vice president's office. Interesting. I'm not sure why the Mayo Clinic would succumb to that other than to just, fuck it, whatever. I just don't want to deal with it. It's just odd. And in election news, Biden wins Kansas with 77% of the votes in the primary there. But that's not the big news. Just like in Wisconsin, it was Wisconsin. The big news wasn't that Biden crushed it because, Bernie's suspended his campaign, so that's not unusual. The big news in Wisconsin was that the liberal judge that was challenging the incumbent Republican conservative Wisconsin Supreme Court judge named Kelly won, and won by a massive margin, 120,000 votes. That's like quadruple the number of votes people normally win by in Wisconsin. And that's what's going on in Kansas. The big news in Kansas, first of all, they had a ranked choice primary this year instead of a caucus. And they pushed aggressively for mail-in ballots. And the big news here is Kansas doing that tripled their turnout. Kansas usually sees 8 to 10% voter turnout in primary contests this year, but they had a 35% turnout of registered Democrats, which is still low, but that is triple what normally happens and is just further evidence that caucuses need to be go the way of the dodo. Biden won 69% of the votes in the first round of the ranked choice system. The candidates receiving the least votes are eliminated each round, with those votes going to the second choice on the ballot. Sanders won 18% in the first round. Warren got 8%, and 1% went to Tulsi. So Tulsi, her 1% had to be redistributed. Then Warren's in the third round got redistributed. But that's when Sanders and Biden ended up with the votes. And that's how the breakdown went. It was 77. Yeah, 77% for Biden. So that is proof that mail-in works. It tripled their numbers. And it also shows ranked choice is good and we need to get rid of caucuses. So that is the news out of Kansas. And now it is time for some early Schadenfreude. Schadenfreude! All right, from the Washington Post. A bad guy accidentally sends an email to a former member of Mueller's team, thereby, quote unquote, launching a probe, or at least an inquiry. And joining me today to discuss this is former federal prosecutor and MSNBC legal analyst Glenn Kirshner. Thank you for speaking with me today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
So when I first read this story, first I laughed. Second of all, I thought to myself, who do I know that has the longest time in as a federal prosecutor? And that is you by a mile. And so I wanted to get you on here to ask you if you've ever had or heard about anyone having a bad guy accidentally email you when he meant to email, you know, a buddy of his, thereby causing you to like sort of want more information from him about what he was emailing his pal about. Have you ever heard about anything like that happening?
So, you know, I've never had this exact thing happen where a witness or a suspect or a target erroneously sent me something that was, if not incriminating, then, you know, at least of keen interest to our investigation. I'm sure we've all had the erroneous reply all when one of our emails might have been disseminated more broadly than we intended, but this reading this about Jerome Corsi's erroneously sent email to Zelensky, one of the Mueller prosecutors, was a first.
Yeah, that's the best part. This is Jerome Corsi, right? And he was interviewed extensively by the Mueller team. He's been on my fantasy indictment draft for over a year. So, quick overview, Corsi was emailing a doctor named Vladimir Zelenko, a New York family doctor who has lobbied the White House for the use of hydroxychloroquine. But instead of sending the email to Zelenko, Corsi sent it to Zelensky, the former Mueller team lawyer, who is now, just by some stroke of kismet, working out of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Maryland overseeing coronavirus fraud. So this isn't an investigation. It's not a probe or anything. It's just he asked him for the documents. And what does that say to you that Zelensky was like, hey, send me all your emails?
Yeah, that is kind of a dead giveaway in my estimation, that even if prosecutor Zelensky is interested in the email, and even if the Department of Justice raised an eyebrow when they saw something, that I'm not making any accusations, but there is a lot of fraud going on, you know, among the aspiring snake oil salesmen out there trying to take advantage of our national health emergency. I'm not saying that's what Corsi was doing, but if it were me and I got an email from somebody like Jerome Corsi, and I love your characterization that he is on your kind of dream indictment team, I, you know, if I thought there was anything that even had a whiff of crime in it, the last thing I'm probably going to do is respond to that email by saying, hey, Mr. Corsi, I appreciate that this wasn't for me, but now that I've read it, I would like you to just voluntarily send me any other email communications or other communications between you and this other Zelenko character or whatever his name was that you were communicating with. That, to me, does not really suggest that the prosecutors think there's criminal activity going on there, because if they did, I can tell you what I would have done. I would have gotten a search warrant for all of his electronic communications, or perhaps I would have tried to acquire some of them through the grand jury if I did not think Jerome Corsi had any criminal exposure. But if I did, then I'm going to get a search warrant, and I am getting my hands on all of the electronic communications between Corsi and Zelenko. And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, Corsi was not an inconsequential figure in the Mueller probe because he was the guy that Roger Stone was trying to keep from being outed as a possible go-between for Stone with WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. And it went so far, and of course he tried to make Randy Credico take the fall for that, he went so far as to, I should say the Mueller team went so far as to apparently draft a plea agreement and give it to Corsi and say, look, sport, if you don't come on board, you're going to get indicted. And then, as you say, Corsi never got indicted. So, you know, we don't know. We're left to speculate why that is. The most normal explanation, in my experience as a prosecutor, is it's because he started to cooperate, whether formally or informally. But, you know, that is a significant loose end in the Mueller investigation and the Roger Stone WikiLeaks, you know, Russia incident that I hope we get the answer to in the near future.
Yeah, I hope so, too. I was wondering, like, is it predicate to launch an investigation just because it's Jerome Corsi? But, you know, it sounds like I'm probably still going to be pointless, or, you know, I'm not going to earn any Fantasy Indictment League points from Corsi on this one either, is what it's sounding like. But just still.
Yeah, you got to look elsewhere for your draft, for your fantasy indictment draft points.
Yeah, right now all my money's on superseding Parnas and Fruman indictments, so we'll see how that goes. But anyway, I appreciate you talking to me about this because, I mean, I do want to know the facts about it, but also immediately it was just hilarious.
Yeah. No, it definitely, it brightened my day. It was something that was not immediately like gloom and doom and more Americans are going to die of the coronavirus. So it's always nice to have that kind of a diversion.
Agreed. Thank you, former federal prosecutor, MSNBC legal analyst Glenn Kirshner. I appreciate you speaking with me today.
Thank you.
And coming up next, a surprise last-minute interview with Greg Oliar. So stay with us. Hey, everybody, it's AG. One thing I've learned while doing research for the Daily Beans is the deeper you dig, the more layers you uncover. That's part of what I love about the puzzle game Best Fiends. Best Fiends is actually a great distraction when I need a break from today's insane politics. The more I play, the more fun and exciting it gets. Reaching each new level is like uncovering a new layer in a story. But it's like a story you get to be a part of. And I love this game so much. It's so relaxing. It's amazingly fun. It's an app that's free to download. It's a 5-star rated game with a bright, vibrant design, very calming, fun characters. It combines an exciting story with challenging puzzles to engage your brain. Keeps my brain awake. But it's casual. Anybody can play it. It's not like, you know, Call of Duty or something. You don't have to be a gamer. You collect tons of characters. You use them strategically in each level. I'm like a level 134 now. You can share your progress via social media, and it's awesome. So engage your brain with fun puzzles and collect tons of cute characters. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, with new levels, events, and characters added every month. So it's fresh and it's always new. It's hours of fun right at your fingertips, and you can play offline. So if the internet goes down, you don't have to, you know, quit playing it. It has over 100 million downloads, tons of 5-star reviews. Best Fiends is a must play. Download Best Fiends free on the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's friends without the R, Best Fiends. All right, everybody, welcome back. First thing this morning, Sunday morning, birds chirping, sun shining. It's about 6:30. You can hear the do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do as I sit up and wipe the sleep out of my eyes. Picked up Twitter. I always check Twitter first thing in the morning, and my mind was blown. I immediately had to speak with Greg Oliar about what I saw on Twitter. So enjoy this very, very early morning discussion. Pre-coffee, be wary. I was still half asleep, but you're going to enjoy it. All right, everybody. Joining me right now is a great friend. He's been on our show several times, written a bunch of books. Really, really incredible guy. Greg Oliar, how are you this morning?
I'm having a strange morning. How are you?
You are, and I need to explain to everybody why I'm sort of laughing. I just woke up, okay? And I jump on Twitter like I always do to see if there's any breaking news, see if Trump's, you know, been arrested or whatever, you know, whatever it is. And I see that the acting director of national intelligence has responded on Twitter to a tweet that Greg Oliar put out. Now, Greg Oliar, you have what I would like to consider a series of traitor tweets.
Oh, yeah.
Where you just, if somebody says something on Twitter who's an obvious, you know, compromised asset or idiot or something, you will just grab that tweet, quote it, and you will say the traitors are easy to spot.
The traitors are easy to spot. Exactly. And I should say traitor is ultimately a subjective term, but the way that I use it, I think that we're in a Manichaean struggle for the future of the country. And you're either on our side or you're on Trump / Russian mob side, period. There's no middle ground. There's no third way. You're either with us or you're against us. So from that standpoint, anybody that's aiding and abetting Trump is a traitor, period. End of discussion.
Yeah. And so here we have, okay, let's real quick talk about who the DNI is. In after 9/11, there was a commission, a very long commission, and they've tried to find out what went wrong, what slipped through the cracks. They determined that a lot of the reason that this happened, that 9/11 happened, was because there wasn't effective communication between the intelligence agencies. So they created the Office of Director of National Intelligence, which sits atop all 17 intelligence agencies, and it is their job as an intelligence professional and expert to coordinate the communication between all of the intelligence agencies. Do I have that right?
That sounds right to me, yeah.
Yeah, and so during Mueller's testimony to Congress, you remember when he was like, yes, I take your question. And when Ken Buck said, are you saying that the president could be arrested when he leaves office? And he said, yes. And that whole, that July testimony from Trump after Barr shut him down. I mean, I'm sorry, after the investigation ended. Then he said, when asked, you know, what is important? I think it was William Hurd who asked him this. And he said, look, the number one most important thing, and of course I'm paraphrasing here, is that we have somebody in the DNI that is awesome. We have to have coordinated communication between our intelligence communities because Russia is interfering as we sit here. And it was just a very important job. And now I don't know, first of all, what did he tweet? Tell us what happened this morning.
Well, I tweeted at him a while ago. It was quite some time ago. And his tweet, I'm actually not looking at it right now, but he wrote, he didn't respond. He actually forwarded, he RT'd me. And he said, you know, dear Greg, we can debate about these things without calling me a traitor or a Russian operative. His words, I love America, and then he wants to go in there and make sure that the IC is protected from politics inside and outside. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the gist of it. And
but you didn't call him a Russian operative.
Well, that's the first thing, is I didn't say that. So why did he say that? Why did he offer that? Our friend Uncle Blazer was like, I think it's amusing that he's the acting director of national intelligence is engaging in a Twitter debate about whether or not he's a Russian operative.
Yeah. And you didn't say that. That was his.
I did not say that. I didn't imply it. And there's different reasons why he might have said that. I mean, the first reason is maybe he just looked at my profile and saw that I wrote Dirty Rubles book. I don't know. Or he's trying to muddy the waters, and if he screams out the words Russian operative enough, and that phrase loses its meaning, so that when the truth actually comes out, when Biden is president or whenever it is, people will be less inclined to believe it, or it's just a cell phone. I don't know.
Yeah, lubing the truth, we call it. You know what I think? Here's what I think, and of course I have zero documentary evidence of this. But I feel like he's been accused of being compromised by Russia before. And here's why. As we all know, and I think somebody else pointed this out in your tweet, and we reported on it back in February, he was a representative for Moldova without registering as a foreign agent. And
correct.
He failed to disclose payments for work on behalf of a Moldovan politician that the U.S. later accused of corruption. And so that puts him in a very compromising position. And so my very first thought was, aha, if he's in a compromised position and head of U.S. intelligence agencies, Putin's going to go after him for that and use that and leverage that. And then I thought, actually, hang on a second. Maybe that's why Trump hired him in the first place.
Yeah, it's not a feature, it's a bug kind of thing. I think at this point, in human resources, there's what you call a BFOQ, which stands for Bonafide Occupational Qualification, which means that in order to do this job, you have to have certain qualifications. And I think having the Russians having something on you, maybe that's a BFOQ to work closely with Trump. I'm just going to throw that out there.
There clearly aren't any other BFOQs for this position. When I got my fucking GS5... When I got my fucking GS5 job at the VA, where my job was medical clerking, I specifically had to have qualifications in that field. This guy doesn't.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. He's not qualified for the job. I mean, he's basically some kind of Kushner-esque figure. Maybe not even as bright as Kushner. I don't know. You alluded to the Moldovan politician, and his name is Vladimir Plotnak. Plotniuc, Plahotniuk. I just want to put that out there. And also that Grinnell was working for Arthur Finkelstein's company at the time.
Oh.
So that name is tied in closely. So I think that there's definitely a connection between Grinnell and Finkelstein. So, you know, maybe Google that and research it if you're listening to this. So you might find something interesting.
Remind everybody just top line who Finkelstein is.
He's basically one of the original, GOP eminence grease political strategists of the last, 50 years or whatever. Protege of Roy Cohn, but he's right. He's the protege, yeah. And, helped out with a lot of different elections and messaging and this and that for a long, long time. And also was mixed up with other governments and did work with other governments. And that's where the problems sort of come in. So definitely worth a deep dive on him. I haven't done a super deep dive myself, but there's a lot there to keep one busy, as they say.
Yeah, and a lot of people would accuse me of giving Trump too much credit for making a move like this. But after Mueller testifying, saying the most important thing we have is a good DNI, and for Trump to go out and find a compromised one who has no past experience and put him in the job just seems purposeful. And he, of course, we've had a DNI since then, but he was fired because they were briefing Congress that Russia was interfering in the 2020 election. So,
right. So is Grinnell, what steps is he taking to ensure our elections and to fight back against Russian interference? I mean, that's what I don't know. I doubt very much, but, I would be very happy if we turned out to be wrong and he went in there and saved the day. But I'm not hopeful that that's going to be the outcome.
I'm looking at it right now. I'm still just absolutely blown away. You say the traitors are easy to spot. This one's wearing sunglasses for some reason. That's all you said. Because he is. He's wearing blade douchebag date rapey sunglasses in his photo. And that's all. There's not the word Russia is not in it anywhere. And he says, hey, Greg, let's debate without calling people traitors or Russian operatives. You're right. That's an active measure. That is reflexive control. He is just slipping. I feel like he's just slipping the word Russian operative in there so that when it comes out that he is one, it's not as big of a deal.
Right. It's covering his ass in a way, possibly. I don't know what he's thinking. I can't pretend to know.
Well, he has no intel experience, so it can't be much.
No, it's and I saw now Louise Mensch was saying and defending him for some of the work that he was doing when he was the ambassador to Germany in terms of intelligence and making sure that certain RU, pro-RU factions were, being going forward the way that they're supposed to protect us. But my response is, what's he doing for the RU cell that's in the White House? You know, is he taking any measure against that? Because if he's not, what's the point? You know, we have a guy who is a fully owned mob asset who does whatever Putin tells him in the White House during a time of pandemic when over 60,000 Americans are dead because of his negligence. So, you know, Twitter games are cute and all, but if you're in a position to coordinate all of the intelligence agencies, maybe you should use that position to do something beneficial that would actually help all of the people in this country right now, instead of tweeting at me. I mean, I'm a novelist.
Yeah, my laughter didn't mean to insinuate at all that you were unimportant as a human person in any way, but just,
no,
what the fuck?
It is, I mean, in a vacuum, it is grotesquely unprofessional for him to be replying to me at all. And I thought about it, and why is he doing it? I mean, why would he do that other than boredom? And I don't know, maybe he's nothing else going on a Sunday morning, but I think first he wants to intimidate me. You know, he is, after all, he might be ineffectual fop, but he remains the acting director of national intelligence, which ain't nothing, you know.
Yeah.
So he's trying to intimidate me. You know, he's trying to spook me. And the other thing that it does, you know, and to silence me by making me feel intimidated, and also by RTing it rather than just replying, it means all of his followers will see it. And I don't know what percentage of them are Russian bots, but there are a lot of Russian bots attacking my page right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a pain in the ass, too.
Yeah, I was going to ask how you're doing. How are you? It's frightening, right? It's frightening.
I was a little bit shaken up when I first read it. At first, I was like, wait, what? I mean, I know that this guy does do that. He has a track record of engaging in Twitter fights, which, again, you know, you put that away when you have a position like that. Like, I think like when you're in charge of the intelligence agencies, you want to keep a low profile. Isn't that kind of the job?
Yeah, people give me a hard time for engaging on Twitter. And I'm a comedy podcaster news person. I'm not the fucking head of 17 intelligence agencies.
And honestly, I don't even do it that much. Like, I'll call people traitors in a way to promote what they're doing that I think is wrong and antithetical to American values and stuff like that. I call Rand Paul a traitor at least once a week because I think he's a traitor, mm-hmm. and his record indicates that. But I don't expect him to write me back. And it wouldn't be professional if he did. I mean,
no.
You know, a senator would never do that and shouldn't, you know, on either side of the divide. But somebody like this, who is, you know, also like the head of the, you know, chief spook, is also, you know, that lends an air of intimidation to it, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
But it could also mean that he's scared, you know, if he is the director of national intelligence, which he is, and they are telling him things, then he must know what they know to some degree. And that, I would think, would make him very, very terrified right now, because things are not going to end well for Trump. I mean, he's clearly guilty. And the evidence is going to come out. Everything that has been repressed for the last 3.5 years is going to come out. And it's going to blow people's minds, I think.
Yeah, you're right. When you say, yes, it's great that you did some anti-RU work as ambassador to Germany, but you're working for probably the single biggest and most destructive Russian operation in the world outside of Russia.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, we can debate how much he knows and is he this or is he a useful idiot or this and that, but there's no doubt that every single thing that he's done since he's taken office has been to further Russian objectives. I can think of no example of anything that he's done that isn't exactly what Putin would want him to do. And,
yeah.
You know, the only reason he hasn't lifted the sanctions is because politically he hasn't been able to do it. He hasn't been able to pull it off. And that's it. You know, that would be maybe one step too far of obviousness.
He hasn't been able to what? What did you say? The reason he hasn't been able to?
The sanctions.
Oh, lift the sanctions. I thought you said the census. I was like, well.
I might have. I don't know.
No, I think you said sanctions. I need my first cup. I'm still like, I literally rolled over. The cat was sleeping on my head, picked up Twitter, and the fucking DNI is retweeting and quoting my friend Greg Oliar on Twitter. And I had to,
yeah, well, you know.
It would be like if Mueller tweeted me and said, time to change the name of your podcast or something. It would be the weirdest thing that I think could ever happen to me. But I had to talk to you about it. So I appreciate you coming on. Any other thoughts you have on this? I hate to laugh because it's frightening, but it's
preposterous. I mean, it's really preposterous. But the other one more thing, I mean, what people have said in my defense backing me up is that the bot activity and all of this stuff usually indicates that we're over the target. So something's going on, you know. There's been a lot more bot activity than usual in the last couple of weeks. And I don't know, it sure feels like we're building up to something. There's a lot of things that are about to get released, maybe. There's the Epstein stuff. There's the redacted Mueller stuff. There's the SCOTUS, you know, Mazars, Deutsche Bank documents. There's a lot of stuff.
Grand jury material.
At some point. And at a time when, by the way, people were just home bored, so they actually have time to read it, you know?
Yeah.
And thanks, quarantine. No, so, you know, I think they're trying to do everything they can to forestall what's going to happen. But, you know, you can't bottle up the truth like that. Too many people know what's going on. And, you know, the truth is going to come out and it's going to be damning.
Exactly. I think somebody should do a frequency wave of Trump Twitter tirades and bot activity on Twitter. I think that I've noticed they match up and like one sort of slowly follows the other. And it's we had a total meltdown last week from Trump over the FBI and Comey. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, for and somebody, I you know, for calling it a hoax so often, they sure won't let it go. Was that you?
No, but it's true. I mean, and they like to reprise the greatest hits also. You know,
yeah.
There's Comey, there's Hillary, there's, you
Strzok,
know, the hoax,
okay.
The witch hunt.
Yeah.
Flynn, my God, Flynn, you mentioned Flynn, and the bots come out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah.
It's really something. You know, that guy is like, it's almost like he's the king of the bots.
Yeah, he's the worst, I've noticed. If I mention him, I get attacked the most.
Yeah, and I don't know why that is, but it's definitely a thing.
Well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. Everybody, pick up Dirty Rubles wherever you can. And where can they find you on Twitter?
I'm just at Greg Olear, which is GREGOLEAR. And you can find me there and read my Substack newsletter/blog at Prevail. If you just click on the link on Twitter, it'll take you to it.
Yeah, I highly recommend that. You just recently did a really, really great 3-part series that I think everyone should check out. So thank you again, and please take care of yourself.
I'll try. Thanks for having me.
Blink twice if you need anything.
Right. They are treating me very well. Everything is fine. The food is delicious.
You sound like you're flying on American. All right. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. All right, everybody, stick around. We have the good news block and quarantine confessions with Mandy Reeder next. Hey, everybody, it's AG. This helping of Daily Beans is brought to you by Caliper CBD. Countless products promise to promote wellness. There's drastic diets, extreme fitness routines, over-the-top supplements and regimens. The list never ends. But who says taking care of yourself has to be so hard and so, you know, structured and difficult? Caliper believes that everyone deserves to feel better, naturally, and drastic changes should not be required. That's why they made a more precise and reliable CBD product that's easier to take than CBD oil. Caliper CBD is the first to provide consistent, convenient, and precise CBD in a water-soluble powder. And unlike CBD oils, Caliper CBD powder is completely tasteless, so you get all the benefits of CBD in a dissolvable powder that mixes easily in any food or drink. You can feel better naturally without upending your lifestyle. I love that the CBD from Caliper comes in convenient pre-measured packets, so I don't have to worry about how much I'm taking. I can easily integrate it into my daily routine by adding it to my morning coffee or protein shake. And I like that it doesn't have a weird grassy flavor. And best of all, Caliper CBD really helps with my stress, helps me feel calm, I feel less achy, and it even helps me snooze. And your body absorbs Caliper more rapidly than it does with oils and tinctures. Caliper gives you all the benefits of CBD in just 15 minutes. That's twice as fast as CBD oil, and it's clinically proven you will absorb, your body will absorb 450% more CBD with Caliper as compared to tinctures. Caliper is made with all natural non-GMO ingredients, no fillers, no chemicals, added chemicals, or artificial flavors. It comes in an affordable 10 and 30 count packs that you can get started for under $20. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code DAILYBEANS at trycaliper.com/dailybeans. Caliper is so sure you'll love the product, they even offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. So that's trycaliper, CALIPER.com/dailybeans. Don't forget promo code DAILYBEANS for 20% off your first order. All right, everybody, it's time for the good news.
Well, we'll float on, good news is on the way.
And joining me for the good news today is Amanda Reeder. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. We got a call to get you back on to the good news for today. So here you are.
Here I am. Yes, everyone, I am okay. people are like, are you okay? Yes. I mean, we're all a little bit not okay, but I'm not that not okay, if you know what I mean. I am drinking more wine, but I'm fine. I do have some good news for you.
So do I. Let me start with this hit first before you get there. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals has denied the stay in the Mueller grand jury materials case and has given the Department of Justice only until May 11th, that's 7 days from now, to seek a stay from the Supreme Court. Now, I think that the Supreme Court will grant this stay and take up the case to hear it on the merits, but I do think ultimately it will be decided that the Mueller grand jury materials get handed over to the House of Representatives. I don't want people to think that just because the Supreme Court grants a stay, which they have in every single Trump case, by the way, I don't want you to think that just because they're doing that, that means the court is bought and paid for. Yes, it might be bought and paid for, but we won't know until we start getting some of these decisions on these big cases, which should start happening right before the election. Mm-hmm. So that's my good news. What do you got?
I have a couple of things. At the top here, though, in case you did not know, the Prime Minister of Canada has announced a ban on assault-style weapons. Mm-hmm. So that is kind of a big deal, considering it is our only large mass shooting in the last 30 years. It is 22 people murdered in Nova Scotia is the worst mass shooting actually in Canadian history. The worst before this was in 1989 in Montreal. He's going to ban AR-15 style assault weapons. And there is some blowback on this in Canada, obviously, from some of our more conservative members of our parliament, but it's hugely good news. And it's really hard not to celebrate this without being extremely frustrated about the lack of action here. But it is amazing. It is amazing. It's really amazing to see my home country move so quickly on that. A lot of people think that Canadians don't have guns. That's not true. We just have stricter licensing and registration procedures. But the fact that we're strengthening gun control to this extent this quickly is really amazing. And hats off to Trudeau and his government for that.
Yeah, I think y'all have more guns per capita than we do. Like, you're a gun country.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We have a lot of people who live in, you know, really rural areas who love hunting and, you know, and we have a lot of people who own guns for various reasons. We do have a lot of guns. They're just a stricter licensing. But yes, so that is really amazing.
That's very good news. Very good news. Almost 2,000 different kinds of assault style weapons banned. And I say assault style weapons because if you say assault weapons, you're going to anger some gun people who say that we don't know what we're talking about when they themselves can't find a clitoris but want to regulate my body. Anyway, I really, really appreciate this, and it's a good example, and I hope that it motivates some folks down here to get active and vocal about something similar.
Well, hopefully also it provides a little bit of framework for moving forward with some of this gun control in the U.S., hopefully in the future when we have a more progressive House and Senate. Trudeau is allowing a 2-year amnesty period to allow people who already own these firearms to comply with the ban. A lot of these people are actually licensed gun owners, so they know who they are because we've had a strict licensing program in place for a long time. And then he's going to pass legislation sometime in the next year about fair compensation so that they're going to do like a buyback program. Mm-hmm. So that's great news. I'm super happy to hear that. And I hope it goes hope it goes well.
Yeah, and on the buyback program and the amnesty period and things like that, we can learn from that type of thing about how to do it down here. However, we are no strangers to assault bans ourselves. We banned assault weapons in the 90s. It was Joe Biden who helped put that together, as a matter of fact. So
and then it expired, right?
Yes, it expired, and the Republicans wouldn't renew it. Republicans in Congress wouldn't renew it, but under pressure from the NRA and other gun lobby groups, but the NRA being the biggest. But yeah, we're no stranger to assault weapons bans here. But definitely, there's going to be some great best practices. Going to be great best practices coming out of Canada on how to deal with moving forward properly and seamlessly with this kind of ban. So great news. Thank you.
Teach you our best practices. Yeah, I did know that about Biden, actually. You're right. That was one thing that people said earlier in the primary. They were like, Bernie did not ban for the assault weapons ban, which is true. Some more good news from this side of the border, where I currently live. And this is great. I love this. This is from Deet. Deet says, a Washington GOP state rep and former head of the state GOP party in Washington are voting for Biden. Yeah, I love that.
Somebody also withdrew their support for Justin Amash today. Lincoln something or other. They had endorsed him for Congress, and now they're like, he wants to run for president. We withdraw our endorsement. Fuck you.
Yeah. It's good to see that there are some honorable Republicans. We actually have another good news further down also about some more honorable Republicans. That's a theme today, which I love. I'm here for that. All right. This one's from Jen. Jen says, good news. I've completed 2 quarantine 5Ks in 2 weeks. Amazing. I have not. I've completed 5,000 trips to the fridge, but good for you.
That could equal into a 5K. You don't know.
I did a 5K too. 5K trips to the fridge. Prior... I've been trying to like exercise in earnest a little bit. Like I'll go for like a brisk walk, or I'll get on the bike, or whatever. But like, yeah, it's not been the exercise I was doing before quarantine. I'll put it to you that way. Anyway, this is your moment, Jen, not mine. Jen says, I've completed 2 quarantine 5Ks in 2 weeks. Prior to COVID-19, I'd be lucky to have completed even 1 in a year. 2 weeks ago and 2 weeks into training, I resigned from FLDEO, which I'm not sure what that is, in favor of my mental and emotional health. And the trade-off was walking daily. So good for you, Jen. That's freaking rad.
Nice, nice. Oh, and by the way, I found it. It's the Lincoln Movement, who tweeted, we endorsed Justin Amash for Congress earlier this year. It was an easy call. The congressman showed uncommon courage in his impeachment vote. The presidency is different. There's no margin for error, and Trump remains an existential threat. The Lincoln Movement rescinds its endorsement.
That's funny. This is from Karen. Karen says, political good news. On the podcast, you previously discussed the way that Governor Larry Hogan, is that the guy in Maryland? Yeah, Maryland. Was able to bravely purchase and hide. Mm-hmm. This sounds like from a movie, honestly, the fact that he had to hide PPE and test kits. And now the latest on this. On Saturday, Governor Hogan canceled the contract to purchase PPE because the company failed to deliver. The company was only recently started by GOP political operatives, Kel Surprise. Hogan also referred the matter to the Maryland Attorney General. Hogan's actions have surprised many people since he's a Republican. But don't forget, his father was Congressman Larry Hogan Sr., the only Republican to vote for all 3 articles of impeachment against Nixon. So there are still a few honorable Republicans, even though they are an endangered species. Maybe the Trump fever is finally starting to break.
Good.
So, yeah. Love that one. This is from Anonymous. She says, I'm an American now living in London. I was supposed to get married on May 8th, but we've postponed the nuptials due to the current crisis, obviously. What I find interesting is that my fiance and I watch American news every single night, and he's entertained while I'm enraged. He doesn't have to lay claim to the ignorance of my country. Yes, I know I'm jumping ship for another country, but I am still an American. I actually started dating outside of the country immediately following the presidential elections. I knew I wanted to leave back then. Amazing that a president can provoke these feelings. Anyway, as I sit here sheltering in place in London, I am looking at the way we selfish, immature Americans are dealing with the situation versus the way that the British deal with it. We protest and carry assault rifles to public places and risk the health of everyone around us to make our point known. The Brits simply carry on. Yes, I love the democracy under which I was born, the one that is spoken of in the words of our forefathers, but I feel like that is dead. I feel like there is no democracy. However, the best thing to come out of this pandemic, which is, yes, devastating, is that Trump cannot hide how ill-prepared he is to be a leader. When your back is against the wall, who are you? This lockdown has told me that Trump is exactly who we thought he was, that Andrew Cuomo is hot, and my future husband, who has been my constant companion for over a month, has been vetted through the process of isolation, and that there is no other human I would walk this life with. So I got a better gift than a wedding. Yes, I want to feel pretty in my gown, but really I got to feel something better, something slightly more patriotic, slightly more optimistic than I felt in a long time, that Biden will get elected. And most importantly, confidence that I'm marrying one cool dude and grateful to be on vacation from work so I will not have to worry about money right now. I love you beautiful women. I love your show, and I need you girls to keep up the good fight. I think I speak for a lot of your listeners when I say we support you and have your back.
That's, thank you.
Yeah, I'm happy that this pandemic has given you optimism in American democracy. That's good.
Yeah, and I'm so also glad that, you know, you found the person, you know, your person, and that it's definite because of this lockdown. I think that that's great. I've learned other things too about myself, being able to be by myself, which is the opposite. But I totally appreciate where you're coming from on that, even though our situations are different. I just love that I just love the positive lessons that are coming out of this.
Totally. And it's really also really hilarious how many people want to sleep with Andrew Cuomo.
Yeah.
I'm more of a Chris Cuomo kind of gal. Like, if I had to pick a Cuomo brother, I think I'd go for Chris.
I'm still Cuomo sexual though.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, look, it's not my usual vibe. Chris Cuomo seems like a very straight kind of sports dude, and as a artsy bisexual, that's not so much my vibe very often. But Chris Cuomo, I'd cross the line for him.
Dude, and I tell you what, him and Anderson Cooper the other night, Anderson Cooper just had a baby.
I know.
And him, and at, like when they were doing the show's handoff between Cuomo and Cooper, Cuomo was giving him all of these baby things, like, you got to take him into the bath, and then you give him a massage where you take lotion and you pull his arms out, because, you know, they always keep their arms in, and then you got to try this, and you'll see the smile, and Anderson Cooper is smiling, like beaming, smiling, and Cuomo is just so excited, telling him all these things about infants, and it's just this absolutely, like, seriously, the hottest thing I've ever seen in my whole life.
You know, I know that we shouldn't, as feminists, give men a pat on the back for being good fathers, but I can't help fucking help it. You know what I mean? When someone's a good dad, I'm like, God damn it, this is so attractive. Yeah, it's true. Can I also just say, we got some like excellent confessions this week. Really good. I really pushed the fact that you could submit anonymously. So people were like, yeah, I'll submit anonymously. And we got some great ones.
All right. So it is time for Quarantine Confessions.
So this one is from Anonymous, and Anonymous says, to make the most out of this self-isolation boredom, my husband and I started a Pornhub account, and we are making videos. It's been fun. We wear masks to remain anonymous, and we have 300 subscribers already and almost 6,000 views in just a month. So fucking good for you, dude.
Monetize that shit, man.
Dude, right? Yeah, in case you didn't know, there's a service called OnlyFans, which is like, you know, porn Patreon. So if you want to make some real cash from that, get yourself an OnlyFans account. You're welcome. Pornhub is like the YouTube of the porn world, you know, but if you want them to make more money from subscribers, get yourself an OnlyFans. Anyway, this one is from Wesley. And Wesley says, there's a theme this week to the confessions. I think people are horny. Wesley says, I'll just say it. My backyard is very hidden, and I'm basically always naked now. I live in Washington, and we enjoy the sun when we can. I've taken business calls naked, I've talked to relatives naked, and I've done some weeding naked. Sorry, satellites.
Sorry, satellites. Sorry, Google Earth. Awesome.
Oh, God. Do you listen to our show naked? Actually, don't answer that. I don't want to know. Okay. Another one. This is from Anonymous. As a director of a nonprofit, most of my days are spent in Zoom meetings with staff, board members, city, and nonprofit leaders. I also happen to be the mom of a seven-month-old. Sorry, the rest of the thing is about breastfeeding, so seven-month-old, not seven-year-old.
Yeah, that'd be okay. That is, nah, we don't.
That's a little bit too old. Yeah, I also happen to be the mom of a seven-month-old. While pre-COVID, I was pumping milk in the office. Now it's just simpler to breastfeed. Since I'm often multitasking, I've often found it easier lately to let the girls fly free rather than deal with the wacky straps and snaps of a nursing bra. Plus, apparently, my child now believes I'm always on tap. Needless to say, the mute and video off function on Zoom has become my best friend. Mm-hmm. It hasn't happened in real life yet, but I've legit had a recurring nightmare where I accidentally flash a bunch of folks some titty, and I'd rather not go burlesque on them just yet. Anyway, say a prayer for me that I get out of this quarantine flesh free.
I would be terrified of accidentally not muting or, oh man, yeah. That's great. Yeah, this is it's naked time on Daily Beans.
It's naked week. Naked week on the Daily Beans. All the confessions were nudie this week. Then she says, P.S. you ladies are so awesome, and I sincerely appreciate your humor, vulnerability, courage, badassery, and humility. Thank you so much.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
This is the last one for today from a fellow San Diegan, and Anonymous says, my confession, I have 5 open bags of shredded cheese in my fridge right now. 5. I think I have the same, like, I might have 6, to be honest with you. We eat a lot of cheese. Currently, I'm using at least 3 flavors of cheese per day. P.S. I'm in a quote-unquote essential cannabis delivery driver here in San Diego. Please remind people to tip their delivery drivers. We earn minimum wage with no hazard pay. If you can't afford to tip your weed lady, you can't afford to have your weed delivered.
Agreed. If you're ordering weed and you're not tipping your bud delivery person, you are not chill, and you don't deserve weed.
You are not creating good vibes.
No, you are. The Secretary of Vibes has an issue with you.
Correct. So yeah, it was a pretty nudie weekend in the confession. So I enjoyed that. Keep sending in your anonymous confessions and keep sending in your good news.
Yeah, it's naked time. We're watching Pooh Bear. If you know what that's from, I will give you $1 million. But I don't have $1 million. I will just give you a high five. Hit us up at Daily Beans Pod if you have any guesses. And do you have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
My only final thought was that if you joined our live stream yesterday for patrons, it was super fun. Thank you for joining us. And if you would like to become a patron, you can join our live streams. We're doing them every week as long as our lockdown lasts in California. And they've been really fun. So, yeah, that was my only final thought.
Yeah, and I think we might continue them after lockdown.
Yeah, why not?
They're so much fun. I'm going to see if I can get some guests on there. I do have one. I have one final thought here. Over the weekend, I wrote a very long email to former acting director of the FBI, Andrew McCabe. I've known him for a while now. He's an awesome person. We covered his book, The Threat. He and his wife became patrons of Mueller, She Wrote, our sister podcast. He's just a very, very awesome person. And so I wrote him an email about some of my thoughts. He wrote me back. I'm not going to go into the details. I just wanted to read this last line for you because it really meant a lot to me. He closed with, I hope this note helps in some small way. I really like it that we've managed to stay in touch. Thank you for that. Stay safe. The world needs you. Andrew McCabe. Oh, the world
needs you. That's so nice.
The world needs me. Andrew McCabe said so. The FBI says so.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I think that's a recurring theme that we're getting. People consistently seem to be, like, very grateful for a source of news which brings some levity you know, because it's rough out there. It's rough to find the information that you're looking for without feeling like utter despair. So I think what we're doing is important. And I think what you're doing is super important.
Yeah, it was the most common theme at our live shows when we were out on tour last year. And I don't know, I don't know if it's sunk in. I'm so grateful, though. And it's just like, you know, but the imposter syndrome is strong with me. But I can't thank everyone enough for their immense support, whether you're a patron or not. It just even listening and commenting and sending us these confessions and sending in corrections for Muller She Wrote. It's just joining us for our cocktail hours, our live streams. It's just so immensely incredible. And I'm just so proud of our community that we've built. So thank you, everyone, for that. And I really do appreciate it. Everybody, please take care of yourselves and take care of each other. Take care of the planet and take care of your mental health. I've been AG.
I've been Amanda Reeder.
And them's the beans. The Daily Beans is executive produced and directed by AG and Jordan Coburn, and engineered and edited by Mackenzie Mazzell and Starburns Industries. Our marketing manager, executive assistant, production and social media direction is Amanda Reeder. Fact-checking and research by AG, Jordan Coburn, and Amanda Reeder. Our music is written and performed by They Might Be Giants. Our web design and branding are by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios, and our website is dailybeanspod.com.